Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!
Listen,
let the
title of this thing. Don't title again.
And I did only be a little money.
Is it rolling, Bob?
That was a pretty puny bell, but good enough. Dicks and Jeans podcast episode number 494. No, 794. And it is June 23rd, 4 p.m. in the afternoon on a bit of an overcast day. It was a little bit rainy earlier. I just finished staining the deck bench. We had a bench put on when we had the deck made against their recommendation, and I'm so glad I insisted on it. But it's been time to restain the deck. I think I missed it last year, and I think I probably missed it the year before when I really should have done it. But anyway, went into the garage and found I had leftover stain that I had bought when it was time to do it the first time. And so got a little bit done, just to start. Haven't done the main floor part yet. That's a bigger job, and I'm going to power wash it again. But actually, it feels kind of good that I will actually get a project taken care of this summer and all this time off. Normally, this time of year, I'm just pulling my hair out. It's like a month exactly before my students would normally arrive, and I'm still scrambling to find that last host family or who's going to drive who. And all kinds of worries and last-minute things that I've got to put in place. And this year, I am freed from that altogether, and I like it so much, I really am not going to go back and start this tour again. It's the end. I'm done. It's really time to give it up. I was looking back at a post I put up on my Facebook account from about 7 years ago when I was stepping aside of president of the Canada-Japan Society, and that too seemed long ago and far away. And all these things, as you get older, you do gradually have to let go of things and give things up, and it's not a bad thing, necessarily. It is a change, but not necessarily a bad change. There's plenty to keep me busy, and so overall, I'm just fine. Sorry. I hope the music's not too loud in the background. I'm testing. I'm going to send a Love and Rockets CD to my dear friends in Vancouver, and I'm just trying to decide which one would be the best suited for the person I have in mind. Okay, I said this was Dicks and Jeans podcast number 7. No, sorry, wrong again. 796. And you might be saying, if you're an astute listener, well, what happened to 795? And I will tell you right now, it is done, it is complete, it is posted, but you will not be downloading it automatically. I change things so that you won't get it in your feed. And that's because I was troubled doing it. I won't say too much about it. The only message I want to get out is that if anybody is interested in listening, you are certainly welcome to. All you have to do is email Dickson James, DickSnJanes, @gmail.com, and say, you know, 795, please, or whatever, and I will send you the new link, and you can listen. As I say, it's not one I was comfortable doing, and it was either going to be not put it out at all. And then I thought, well, I haven't done that in the past, really. Why should I now? So instead, it's if you want to listen, you can, but you can certainly take a free pass and skip it altogether. That would be just fine, too. I'm not expecting many people to take me up on this. I really don't care. It's not a trick to see who cares or who's listening. It doesn't matter at all if I don't get any emails asking for it. And I'll sort of tell you why. It was to do with things that are going around on social media now, mostly centered around, I suppose, the demonstrations and where you're supposed to be. And I got into a couple of some exchanges anyway with regards to what is the correct outlook or behavior or what are you supposed to post or not post. And my back got up, and I responded to that. So what I did was I sent it to a special advisory panel and said, here it is. You tell me if I should put this up or not. And I will read some of the comments that came back from the advisory panel, and then you can judge from that. I don't think the I'm quoting now. I don't think the episode was really offensive, but it was confusing. It sounded as if you were trying to stand your ground, not apologize, while looking for forgiveness and asking others to tell you what to do at the same time. I couldn't tell if you were being sincere or sarcastic. You sounded flustered and unsure what to say. Authentic, real, vulnerable, confused, and conflicted. So with that in mind, you decide. And we're going to just move on, and you're back listening to Scarborough Dude, Lazy Scarborough Dude, except for the fact that I'm staining the deck. I'm doing something. Yeah, that's good. Still enjoying so many films, mostly from Turner Classic Movies that I'm taping. I mentioned maybe I watched The Yakuza with Mitchum. One today called Shadows. And it was sort of in set against the backdrop of the Beat Generation. It was done in 1957, John Cassavetes. And to do the black-white relations. Very, very interesting. And these are things that just grab my interest. You know, they're different. They're a little bit out there. And again, thank you, Catherine Matthews, for noticing. I am posting everything I write about on every film I see on Twitter under my Scarborough Dude handle. So you can follow along there if you like. It's just been great fun. Now, there's something else I want to tell you about that I discovered, I guess, via my wife, who discovered it via my son in Vancouver. And that is a Japanese series called Midnight Diner. Now, I Googled it and found out there's 5 seasons, starting in 2009 and going right up to 2019, I believe. And it seems like there are also 2 movies made of it. But we're watching the series. We're up to just to season 2 now. The first 3 seasons, at least, are on Netflix. I don't know about seasons 4 and 5, but I know Netflix was involved. And my God, is it enjoyable. They're all under 30 minutes, each episode. And each one is a story about a character who comes into this little kisaten, little bar in Japan, the kind of thing, kind of place that I was so familiar with. And it may be, if you've never been to Japan or don't have much of an interest, you won't pick up the same vibes. But for me, and for my wife and for my son, both sons, it is delightful. The stories are quaint. They're emotional in a Japanese way, sometimes sad. The characters are all well-developed. At the end of each show, the characters who were central to the story wave and say goodnight to you. Oh, yes, I'm in his eye! And just waving their hand like it's the end of the show. Like they step out, they break that third wall. That is delightful in itself. It's also focused on Japanese food. And even my wife is looking, oh, my God, that looks so good. And my son is saying, Mom, that's the way you make the eggs and so on. It's just been delightful. So they'll pick a character, will come in, and each character has a favorite dish. And there's usually a story behind why that dish meant something to them. Like the last one was clams that his mother got him, clams cooked in sake. And each one maybe has a little twist to it. And then at the end of the show, the characters will sort of show you how you make it the right way. The centerpiece holding the show together is the main character called The Master. We don't know his name. We don't know his backstory yet, anyway. It will come up. But he is truly a master in the sense that if you've ever been to one of these little mini bar restaurants, this is taking place in Shinjuku, which the mafia used to, or the Yakuza used to control. These tiny little shops. And of course, there are Yakuza characters and strippers and dancers and gay people and photographers and singers and TV comedians and actors. There's just a broad spectrum of Japanese culture. And each one who walks through that door just gives me a thrill. It's heartwarming. And again, even better, the fact that we're all enjoying it together. But the master says very little, but of course is full of sage advice and will interact with each character. The menu is simple, but the characters can ask for a special dish. And if he has the ingredients, he will make it. And sometimes they will bring in the ingredients for him. And of course, everybody's drinking these wonderful bottles of Kirin or Sapporo beer, and it makes me thirsty just watching out of the glasses that I'm so familiar with, the exact size of glass that is not too big but big enough for a good swallow, and people sharing the beer and the sake. And oh my God, midnight diner. The thing that really, really strikes me is the master in this show is like the one and true master I knew in Japan, Takeme-san. Takeme's was the bar in Yokohama that I discovered, well, thanks to my friend Jimmy, and would go to on a regular basis, and it was just like this. The one in the TV series, it only holds maybe 9 customers. Takeme's was the same. That's all you need for a full evening. And the master controls everything. And in Takeme's, it was the music. And there might be some food samples, some drinks. But Takeme controlled even when he was going to open or not. If he wasn't in the mood, he just would sit there in the dark and wouldn't open. You'd have to wait until he was ready for you. And that is what a master does. And if you went in and said, buy a round of drinks for the bar, Takeme would refuse if he didn't like it. No, I haven't given you permission to do that. It's fabulous. And we had Yakuza figures would come in with their young girls and hostesses. And I had many, many, many a fine night, like all night there. You know, end up often passing out on the table and catching the first train home. But it was just wonderful. And this character, the way he talks on the TV show, it reminds me so much of Takemi. Maybe there's a certain type of who could be a true master. And that's, it's not just the manager at all. It's far more than that. So anyway, that is my delightful pleasure. I just wanted to share that with you. If you have Netflix, check it out, try it out, if you want a taste of really what Japan is like. And this would go back to probably the 1940s in terms of the quaint characters and storytelling. And there's a host of regular characters who hold the show together, and each week somebody new might come in. And there are a lot of surprising plot twists and backstories that will keep you interested. All right, I think that's it. I'm going to try and keep these segments short. And I'm being drowned out by I don't know how loud it is here. I hope it's not too loud, but for me, it's cranked up. My Love and Rockets that I also truly love. Scarborough Dude signing out in a much better frame of mind than where I was at on the previous podcast that you can listen to if you like, but you got to email me first. Signing out, bye for now with a good click of the bell. That's the CBC radio on in the background. not quite as loud as I was playing Love and Rocket, so I hope it's not interfering too much. I just like to hear it. You know, it's funny, though. So many times I'm doing things, like if I'm preparing a meal, spending a lot of time getting the food out, cutting, slicing. I need to see everything visually in front of me, everything that's in the recipe. I need to know where it is and what it is. And people staring at me as they walk by with a case of beer. Ooh, my God, she's got a nice ass. Sorry, it's not politically correct. I apologize. I apologize to anybody who was offended by that remark right up front there. I mean, I didn't act on it. I just happened to notice and the words came out. All right, park that. Yeah, in the road track for a Thursday. No, it's a Wednesday, June 24th. It's before noon. And where were we? Sometimes that happens. You just get distracted by something passing by. God damn it. Now it's really difficult because I'm going to go into something really serious. And I have to. I always bring my iPhone with me, of course. And I make notes quite often. I know I've denied that in the past, but lately I've been copying and pasting things that I've picked up from Facebook or Twitter or somewhere that there's information I can't possibly remember, so I need to make notes. So, all right, that's just not important one way or the other, but I opened my emails, and there was an email from Atheist Republic. Now, I subscribe to them. These are the people who put out the podcast. They are originally of Muslim heritage and have gone back on their faith, and they're encouraging and supporting other people to not be afraid to come out and leave your religion behind. If you can leave Christianity without anybody threatening to kill you, you should be able to leave Islam for the same reasons. Whatever, you've outgrown it. You don't believe in this God and these rules that were laid down by somebody hundreds of years ago, several hundred years ago. And anyway, so I used to listen to their podcast all the time. I've dropped off lately, but it's been important to me, a different viewpoint. And it's not just, you know, there's a whole movement for atheism, as you know. And I sort of try to put the positive spin on and say, well, I'm a humanist, but that implies you're an atheist. You don't believe in this God. You've got a science approach to life and the world, and figure you can be a moral human being without fear of hell or promise of heaven or whatever, you know. So anyway, we don't need to go into all of that either. But there is this movement, and it's, I think it's a very important one, because it's, we're still in very primitive times, in that you very difficult to run for political office in North America anyway, and then of course even more so in other countries if you came out as an atheist. Maybe if you're a socialist and they'll lump them all together, certainly a communist could get away with it because nobody's going to vote them in anyway, but it's difficult. So that being said, the heading for this particular podcast is Death of Egyptian LGBT Activist Sarah Higazi. Now, I had never heard of this person before, but I feel the need to read out what was written. Egyptian LGBT activist Sarah Higazi was found dead in her home in Canada, where she lived in exile since 2018. Authorities have ruled that she committed suicide, having left behind a letter that reads, "To my siblings, I tried to find redemption and failed. Forgive me. To my friends, the experience, the journey, was harsh, and I am too weak to resist it. Forgive me. To the world, you were cruel to a great extent, but I forgive." Higazi rose to prominence due to her arrest alongside 57 other people after rainbow flags were raised at the concert of Mashru Leila. She was charged with promoting sexual deviancy and debauchery and spent 3 months in prison. After she was freed on bail, she was granted asylum in Canada, where she had been living in exile for the past few years. So if you want to hear more about that, and I think this one I will listen to, go to just Google Atheist Republic. They write underneath, YouTube is very likely to suppress this video because they get pressured by, you know, saying, well, if you're against Islam, you're promoting hate. And that is, that is so wrong. That is so wrong. They're based out of Canada, by the way. Okay, so it seems kind of, I don't know, strange for me to go on and talk about happy things after that. But I think that's what this person would have wanted. It's just terribly sad that somebody would kill themselves from just because they're different and have suffered and felt the pressure and the, you know, the struggle with family. And these days, when people seem to be hypersensitive, you know, if you come out on the wrong side of somebody, even with depending on who you support, you can find yourself in trouble and facing a backlash, as Sam Harris did, of course, for his last podcast. So it's tough. It's very, very tough. Okay, so I don't know. I guess I'm just going to have to go on and find my notes and read on. I guess what I wanted to start with was my wife, yes. I headed off to work today. It's Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday, she works from home. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, she's back with the seniors she works with. And so far, everybody, and she said, because they're Japanese, is still okay. I mean, besides all the things that come with aging, you know, living to be 100 plus, there's no spread of COVID-19 within this institution. People are being very careful. So this morning when she goes in, she's screening every visitor who comes in and so on. So it's a good thing. It's not a health, it's a retirement home and not a hospital or not a nursing home. But still, they're being very good about their rules, and it's wonderful that she found this work so close to my home. And while I'm on that topic, my God, I've been thinking more and more about Japan recently. How much it meant to me. I talked about Takemi's and the nights I'd spend there, but I was thinking about the president of my company, that whole adventure, and being just lucky enough that he just singled me out, said, I like this guy, you know, you're coming drinking with me. And we did a lot of that together. And these are experiences your average foreigner who goes over to teach in Japan for 2 years does not get. I was inside that company, even though I was always different, and which, you know, to my benefit, cut me a lot of slack on things. It was an absolutely wonderful, rich experience. And I'm afraid, like so many things, they'll be forgotten over time. And it's something I want my children to know. And they would get a completely different story from my wife, because, first of all, her life history is different. And where ours coincides, she'll have a version, I'll have a version. But my own experience of being this gaijin, but within this company and being sort of adopted in, with special access to the inner circles and so on. It was really very special. I went back even to 1967 for whatever reason. I was back my first job at the CN when I guess with my first paycheck went out to Eaton's probably and bought myself a blue blazer. These were the days when they had sales clerk and you stood before a mirror and they'd take them off the rack and they'd fitted on you, and I guess he extended the sleeves because I always needed longer sleeves and to fit them and gray flannel pants to go with it, and thinking, oh my God, I've never spent this much money, but that was something. Now that I'm an office worker, that was my very first job at the CN when I quit grade 12 in December after a few months realizing this is not for me. Grade 12 was the equivalent of first year university in Montreal in those days before CEGEP. And those memories, and of course it coincided with the summer of Expo and Canada's centennial year, so it was a wonderful year to be working in an office in downtown Montreal. Yeah. Anyway, I wish I had the discipline, but I'm thinking really the only way I would ever get these stories out is perhaps if my eldest son, who expressed some interest, if he actually interviewed me with a recorder, and I would tell bits and pieces. But on my own, I just don't have the discipline. I always resort to the now. And the now is where I want to get to, because I talk about the creative process sometimes, and the things that just turn me on. You know it's Love and Rockets, and you know it's I'll discover like the first song by Philip Glass, and suddenly, wow, I've got to get into this. And little things trigger them, and they're always random. That just leads to one thing and another, and you follow through that process, and it's just exciting. And it's like the brain gets turned on without the drugs, but it just, hey, it's firing, and things are happening here, and this is pretty neat. So today's little incident was Dave. You know, I always check Facebook posts, and Dave Brodbeck posted a picture of favorite albums. As everybody is doing, and it happened to be Dave Clark 5. And so I thought, well, I've got to respond to that. I can't remember what I posted. I was, oh, me too. I love this stuff. Dave said, you know, it's something like, surprisingly, here's a band I like too. And I said, oh, I like them too. Some fun stuff. And then I remembered, I think it was yesterday, was Dave Brodbeck's post. And I have a rule that if you're a friend of mine, I will not post on your Facebook page happy birthday with everybody else who does, because everybody gets a reminder to tell you to post on their page, because Facebook knows when their birthday is, and so I just don't, as a rule. But this was the day after. Okay, I can do it. So I think, well, what am I going to say? Well, mention that about Dave Clark 5, and then wished him a fun-filled 55 years. And then kept thinking, and prior to this, I had been going through thinking, okay, what's the next song for this very podcast that you're listening to? And of course, it was going to be another Love and Rockets. And I thought, well, maybe they're tired of Love and Rockets, and I'm trying to make them different. But still, I said, maybe I should look elsewhere. Anyway, get back to Dave's post, and I think, oh, because it was Dave Clark 5, I'll play a Dave Clark 5 song for you. So there's the connection, right? And that's why you're going to hear a Dave Clark 5 song, simply because Dave posted their album cover on Facebook, and that just started this pathway. But which one? So I go through, and I have a list of the 2,100-plus songs. That's 2,100-plus songs that have been played on the Dixon Janes podcast. Very few repeats, and if there are any, certainly they stop at three times. At most, and I'll go through, and oh, have I played this? And then I'll find one on my iPhone. Oh, yeah, oh, that'd be a good one to play. No, I played that, oh my God, not that long ago. So if they're far in the past, I might play it again, but yeah, I try to find something different. And today, I found one I hadn't played, and it's not a Dave Clark 5 song. It's one they did a cover version titled Everybody Get Together. Everybody Get Together. It's also called Get Together and goes by different names. And I thought, oh, that's a nice song. It's a real hippy-dippy song. It's done. I knew right away, no, the first group to do this was the Youngbloods. They are the ones who had a hit with it. And so I'll do a little research. And the research turned out to be interesting. And that's what I'm going to share with you right now. If Ken, please, could you get to the point? Thank you. According to Wikipedia, Get Together, also known as Let's Get Together, was written in the early 1960s by an American singer and songwriter, Chet Powers, also known as Dino Valente. He claimed he wrote the song in the summer of 1963. In 65, he was arrested three times. He wrote the song in 63. He wanted to be a songwriter, bit of a tough guy. 1965, he got arrested three times. First two for marijuana and the third one for speed. So, bam, he's hit with a 10-year jail sentence, and there goes that song and his future. So, Get Together, the song was already out and published, was first recorded and released by the Youngbloods in 1967. Yeah, that's what they say. The tune never made the music charts. However, when it was re-released by the Youngbloods in 1969, and that's the version you folks would have heard because you all know it, the song rose to number 5 on the hit charts. Basically, the song appeals for peace and brotherhood and talks about the polarity of love versus fear. So a pretty neat song. Poor guy who wrote it ended up, we'll go on with his story. Let's hear about that song first. So you knew the 69 version, made popular by the Youngbloods. In 64, the Kingston Trio became the first to record the song, including it on their album Back in Town, and they called it Let's Get Together. In 1965, the California group The Wee Five were the first to release the song as a single, taking it to number 31 in the U.S. as Let's Get Together. Okay. 1966, Jefferson Airplane included the song as Let's Get Together on their debut album, Jefferson Airplane Takes Off. I don't have that album, and I didn't know that, but I think it's kind of very fitting that Jefferson Airplane would do it, too. The song became a fixture on the San Francisco music scene with Joni Mitchell and Judy Collins sometimes performing it at live concerts. Get Together stayed in the zeitgeist, with covers by Linda Ronstadt, the Sunshine Company, and the Staple Singers in 1968. But it didn't break through until 1969. Now here, get this part. When the National Conference of Christians and Jews distributed it to radio and TV stations to support Brotherhood Week. This was a personal service announcement that stations were obliged to put something out there, and the message was often, you know, say no to drugs or, check if you've got herpes and whatever. But they chose this song because it had a good message to it. So it was being played everywhere on these stations out of obligation. And that's when whatever the record company was, re-released it as the Youngbloods, and that's when it took off and became the hit. Okay, so there's a little bit of the background story. Now, what about this guy, Powers, who's doing 10 years in jail? Well, to get out of jail, he needed a lawyer. He needed to get money. He sold the rights to the song. And it was actually the manager of the Kingston Trio who bought it. And he lost a lot of money. So the little quote from him when Rolling Stone interviewed him, when they tracked down this song, who wrote this thing? A lot of people say I was stupid for selling all my rights to the song. But for 10 years of my life, man, I can write another song. That's what he said. Now, I don't know if he ever did follow up with another song that made money, but a bit of a sad story and ridiculous. That the twisted story. Like, who would know any of this? I certainly didn't, but only because Dave Brodbeck, who I follow, posted a Dave Clark 5 album cover. You see, that's what I'm getting at. I love things like this. Like the twists and turns, you know? By the way, the Woodstock Festival opener, Richie Havens, played it as his second song following Freedom. I didn't know that. The song was the last, now here, we're getting back to the Dave Clark 5, was the last of the Dave Clark 5's 8 top 10 UK hits. So they made the top 10 list 8 times way back then, and this was the last one that made it up into the top 10 in the UK. When they recorded it as Everybody Get Together in 1970, so that was after this thing. The backing vote, now here is a little bit of information, but thanks to, Wikipedia. The backing vocals on their version were done by the students of the Central London School of Speech and Drama. The backing vocals that you will hear when I play it, coming up soon. Included amongst the backing vocalists was Peter Davison, who went on to star in the BBC TV series All Creatures Great and Small, 1977 to 79, and as the fifth Doctor Who, 1982 to 84, for you Doctor Who fans out there. There's a link to that song, to that poor man who spent 10 years, or would have spent 10 years in jail if he hadn't sold the rights. This was the only version of the song to have much impact in the UK. So I suppose I should come to the lyrics later on, but I'll get it all out of the way now, because by the time I played the song, I will have forgotten. Love is but a song to sing, feels the way we'll die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why. Oh, come on, people, now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Now, you can see why this was big in the 60s, and why all the hippy-dippies and everybody else loved it, and DJs were getting requests. Another line near the end of the song, we are but a moment's sunlight fading in the grass. That's quite nice, too, and it is fitting of the times, too. Life is here now, a moment's sunshine. Sunlight fading in the grass. Love that. Concluding with, if you hear the song I sing, you will understand. You hold the key to love and fear, all in your trembling hand. Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your command. All right. And without further ado, thank you very much. Here is Get Together. Just wanted to tell you. tell you, I remembered what it was that I'd forgotten at the beginning of this when I got on that tangent about memories from Japan and Expo 67. Before leaving for work this morning, my wife kindly made 4 rice balls. That's the English translation, onigiri, if you order them in a Japanese restaurant. And that's just a triangle shape of rice, like, almost an inch thick. But inside, usually a little goodie. In this case, it was leftover salmon from last night's dinner and wrapped in the black seaweed, the sheets that come. And it becomes very soft as it's warmed and adheres to the warm rice. And she made them, 2 for me and 2 for my son. And it was just, as she's hurrying out the door, that was just so nice of her. And it was such a treat. And that's what brought back all the memories of Japan. So I've eaten both of them, but I'm still thinking about it. And that ties in with how we're enjoying so much the Midnight Diner shows, all being about food, Japanese food. All right, back at you. Here's, whatever. Bye for now.
Apollo Control, Houston. 2:50 away from time of LOS now. Our distance away from the moon, 460 nautical miles. Velocity, 7417 feet per second. Here in Mission Control, we're standing by. There's certainly a great deal of anxiety at this moment. We acquire at 36 minutes. So at 68 hours, 55 minutes, continue to monitor. This is Apollo Control.
Okay, we're just going to leave that on in the background, and I'm taking over. I'm in control in the passenger seat. I had planned to go somewhere else to hit the record button, because I always know it's going to have an impact. You know, wherever I happen to be will change what I'm going to say. But after I dropped off the empties at the beer store, $6.35 worth, I noticed the lineup at Wonder Burger was too long, so I wasn't going to get my coffee. Drove to the golf club, which is a nice place to hang out, and I'm going to have to turn this down a bit. Drove to the golf club, and there's a guy at the entrance way, and he says, what time are you teeing off? I'm not a member, and I said, I'm just here for a visit. I think maybe I'll just turn around, and he waved me through, and I turned around, and now I'm back home. So that was that. Thursday afternoon, I power washed the deck today. I replied to one email. I've got another one I have to reply to tonight regarding the summer study tour. Sounds like the school wants to go ahead with me or without me, and that makes me think, should I be pushing to have some kind of an advisory role in this thing? Because I'm the guy who, holds most of the cards, or thought I did, but maybe not. So I don't know. What else to do? Power wash the deck, and found out the rollers so I can do them tomorrow. Big smile from a lady going by with balloons, like big balloons, and a kid in a stroller, another kid running to keep up. That's kind of nice. And a big smile because she sees me sitting here. I mean, I've got control of the sidewalk here. I'm not on the moon, but I've got this neighborhood locked down. Anyway, how are things? How are things with you, my dear little ones? What was it, my sweet peas? Our good friend in Kingston used to call everybody. I can't even remember his stage name. I know his real name. I'm one of the few people who spent an afternoon on his deck when he was out of drag. a lovely character who used to do his own podcast. I really miss it. I always enjoyed it. Oh, my God, I should know his name. And I liked his voice, and I like being called my little sweet peas. There are so many people who are no longer doing the podcast that were part of this core in the beginning or near the beginning, and many have gone away, and here I am, an old man still going on. I was thinking today, I didn't start podcasting till I was 57. What would it have been like? What character would you be hearing if I had started, you know, when I was in my 30s or something? Very different person. And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I've always been this kind of person, to record and to write and to want to reach out to people. So some things would be the same, but I'd guess the content. And what was my life? Where was I? What was I doing in my 30s? Jeez, I was still hanging out in Vancouver. Oh, my God, this sound is getting almost overpowering. I think they've, it's peaking now. That is from Mojo. Mojo presents a compendium of progressive sounds, and that one, the album or the CD, is called Pigs Might Fly, and they've got the Pink Floyd flying pig on the cover or something like it. Looks like Coit Tower in the background. And this one is called Public Service Broadcasting, The Other Side, and that would be the other side of the moon, of course. So, I don't have notes today. Well, I probably do. Actually, if I look, I probably do. Let's see what we can find here. There's nothing pressing. I kind of want to finish this. I've already told you about, if you want to hear the previous episode, just get in touch. I did put up a Facebook page for that, but no links on it. I talked all about Get Together. Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. No, nothing to say, just me here now. So, maybe it'd be better just to, stop and get back to you when I do have something important. Yeah, I'm back. No soundtrack this time. It was Tiffany I was thinking of. I follow Tiffany on, I guess, probably Twitter and Instagram. And Tiffany often posts pictures in outrageous wigs and makeup and a variety of outfits, certainly, especially around the time of Pride Kingston and so on, but a lovable character. So, what was it? Yeah, back to that show I've enjoyed watching. Watched again last night. I'm going to be sorry when we run out, Midnight Diner. I can imagine people who really don't have much experience with Japan or have never been there, lived there, may not pick up on it the same way. There's just things that are so Japanese about it. The manners of the master in particular. Not saying a lot, just a lot of looks, just quiet scenes where he's just looking at a person. And those are quite wonderful, or they are for me. They're heartwarming. And the range of characters, it's like I know them all, the kind of people, because I was exposed to so many people. It's very easy to go to Japan, teach for 2 years, live in a gaijin ghetto, hang out with other people, gaijin foreigners, go to bars that are popular with, you know, international crowd, and not really integrate. You know, that's quite easily. But having been married and having my children born there and working for this company basically the whole time I was there was a very different experience. And in particular, being taken out, as I brag about many times, by the president. I mean, here's a guy with his own restaurant in Yokohama during the peak of the bubble. It was quite amazing. And I guess it just somehow there was a connection that fit at that time of my life. When did I go? 1984, I went over. So 1940, so 36. There you go. There was part of my 30s when first arriving there, not knowing, going on a one-way ticket and having no idea, not envisioning anything at all of what was ahead, not even having a real interest in Japan until I arrived. And then, bam, it just things just fell into place. So when I watch the show and I see the characterization of people, the behavior of the women, so different from the men, that just it's fun. There's always a certain charm. It depends, of course, on the characters. I mean, we're dealing with prostitutes and strippers and bitter unmarried women, and there's a whole range of characters. So, but I just feel that they all seem to be familiar. And I guess the other thing, I'm reading the subtitles, but I'm hearing in the background what they're saying, and a lot of it I'm understanding. So it just sort of it just blends in really nicely. So maybe this is the way Catherine Matthews, I don't know if she's been to Korea, but she's certainly an expert on Korean, Korean in the Indian movies. And I know that she's has to have picked up a lot of those nuances that aren't, you know, necessarily available to people at first glance. But it's brought back so many memories of the richness of the time for me and how it did change my life and how it changed everything. I mean, the fact that we're in this house, the fact that I'm here with two boys born in Japan, one of them in Vancouver. Sorry, I'm just blabbing on a bit, but I'm having a hard time focusing, not because of any mental problems. By the way, my knee is swollen. It's painful. I've got a doctor's appointment in 2 weeks. I wish it was tomorrow to deal with this thing, because now it's just uncomfortable all the time, and I'm not quite sure what the problem is. I'm hoping he will know, and that it's nothing to do with the artificial knee, but just some swelling, some reaction to something or other. Because it's bugging me. Oh, there's a lovely breeze coming in. The moment feels so pleasant. Little memories of Japan. My having that basket that sat on the front of the bicycle that you wouldn't see here at all. And you put your child in that bicycle and they sat over the front fender. Quite, you know, they're not going to fall out. I mean, their legs are going through these little things. Like on a shopping cart that you sometimes see for kiddies. That's on the front of your bike, and riding with my firstborn through the rice paddies of Niigata-ken, where my wife is from, to a local temple or something that you would see in the middle of nowhere, all built out of wood. Things like that. We had one walking distance, and I remember again, firstborn, maybe Daniel would have been just an infant at that point, walking to a temple that was near us in Kawasaki and picking up sticks along the way and holding him up to ring the temple bell. Those are such treasured memories. The kind man, there was a farm across the street from it. Well, not across the street, like on our, connected to our property, through our, I guess the other side of our driveway, really. And he grew special fruit that would be wrapped, grapes that would be wrapped in plastic so nothing could peck at them or get at them, and always kind words exchanged with the neighbors and the local shops. I loved my time in Japan. I really did. And I guess, I mean, I can look back and think that I was fortunate in terms of the timing of coming back here when we did, the boys before school started. The housing market was at its bottom when we bought, which was very fortunate. And my wife, I guess, for the first, you know, several years of being here, was not working, eventually went back to school. Papa's able to, when the kids are at school, have them come home and have lunch, because we live right on the backing onto the a field that backs onto the schoolyard. So it's all been, oh, quite special. Looks, and we're out of time. A few, I'm kind of in a dreamy state sharing those memories with you. Just very nostalgic for good times. And I guess it's all triggered by that TV show. It's bringing back sort of the best. So Scarborough Dude, signing out. Remember, if you want to hear the previous episode, email me at dixonjanes@gmail.com. Bye for now.